LGBTQI++ related, then please fuck off now. If you're still here, strap on in, pun intended, and enjoy the ride.
I'm joined by Sally Edwards from Rainbow Warrior, who's a writer, poet, and activist. And so she's joining me on the podcast today. Hi, Sally. How are you doing?
Hello. I'm good. Thank you.
Good, good. Let's get this one started, Ben.
So what are we going to talk about?
I don't know. Well, obviously the obvious one is kind of LGBT in disability and how that affects you guys, like you and Nat, really, because obviously there's two of you that need to navigate the world and go to gay spaces and, you know, be yourselves as much as possible. And from my perspective, I think it's hard enough being an able-bodied person going into those kind of spaces, certainly when you're first coming out and feeling like intimidated going into a space where everybody knows each other and all that kind of stuff, but not least when you're, you know, I can kind of blend into the background a bit, but when you're whizzing in your chair, if you've even got the access, I imagine that's quite a scary place to be, really.
Well, this is the thing, you've hit the nail on the head there. If you've got access, the biggest problem that we have is accessing venues, you know, because 9 times out of 10, we go to a venue or we inquire about something that's happening at a venue and it's not accessible, you know, and that's probably the biggest hurdle that we face.
And do venues advertise to confirm that they are accessible, or do you always have to be the person that phones and finds out?
9 times out of 10, we're the ones that have to phone and find out. I mean, the bigger sort of like concert venues and whatever, you know, there's usually a section within their website that gives you access information. You know, like the bigger concert halls, for example, there's a designated number that usually that you have to ring, which is separate to the number that you would ring to book tickets, and you go through your access requirements with them. There's usually like an online form that they fill in. They ask questions about what your access requirements are.
Is there a limit on, so obviously able-bodied, they say, I don't know, 50,000 are allowed in the venue, but do they put a limit on how many disabled people are allowed to?
The ratio of accessible seats to every other kind of seat is incredibly low. It's very, very poor. We wanted to go to a concert at a venue up in Glasgow, a very big venue up in Glasgow last year or the year before, and we couldn't go because they said, oh, all four wheelchair spaces have been taken. Now, you're talking about like a 3,000-4,000 seat venue. And there was like four seats, you know, so the ratio is incredibly poor. And it doesn't reflect the percentage of potentially of the amount of people, disabled people that could be applying to go for tickets for that venue. Because I if you listen to my podcast that I put up yesterday, I talked a lot about this and about the sort of the percentages and the ratio of disabled people in the country, etc. And you know,
it's not reflected in the access.
No, I mean, out of everybody in the country, I think it's like 8.5% of those people are people with disabilities.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's not reflected in, you know, the venues for either LGBT spaces or big concerts.
No, not reflected at all. And unfortunately, sadly, you're up against legal red tape in terms of venues having the ability to be adapted to a certain degree to make them more accessible that they are, which is in legal terms, it's called the reasonable adjustment. There's a thing called the Equalities Act, which used to be the Disability Discrimination Act when it first came out in the 90s. And there's certain rules and regulations that venues have to follow to adhere to those rules and regulations. Now, so many venues can jump through hoops with that rules and regulations, because the building that
they make out is reasonable.
Yeah, no, the building that they are housing in is listed as so many years old, and it has official listing, which means that they're restricted to how much adaption they can actually do, so they can get away with it. And the argument that a lot of venues always come back with is lack of funding to make things accessible, which isn't a good enough excuse as far as I'm concerned. But because the way that the Equalities Act has been set out, and in terms of what you have to do as an individual to make changes and to prosecute an organisation or a venue, they make that whole process so difficult and so time consuming that a lot of disabled people just don't even bother, because it's too hard, you know, and you haven't.
And also, you want to live your life. You don't want to be stuck writing letters and emails and phoning people. It should just be a given that you're allowed to be able to access these places.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's very little support. You know, if there'd be more, our society would be more accessible if more people like myself went forward and actually made the formal complaints and actually went right the way through and made some changes. But are put off because their lives are hard enough as it, you know, our time is spent, you know, just trying to live our lives basically as easily and as happily as possible.
I don't know whether you want to give the listeners an idea about what your podcast is, The Rainbow Warrior, like give them a bit of a insight into your podcast and your website.
Yeah, sure. It's very new. I'm an author, a poet, and I also do life coaching as well. I do life coaching with disabled people, but I'm a lesbian fiction author and a poet and writer, and I was doing a live broadcast on the disability LGBT Facebook page the other day, and I was being asked lots of questions, and it was getting quite political, and I got quite fired up by it and quite inspired by it, even though it was meant to be just an arts night. And afterwards I thought, well, a good opportunity for me to have my say on these subjects, because they're obviously important to me, would be, because I've done blogging before and things like that, and vlogging. I thought, well, everybody's doing podcasts at the moment. They seem really, really popular. I'll look into it. So literally last week I started to research it and educated myself as to how to set one up, and just got going with it, and I've just run with it really. And it's just an opportunity for me to sort of talk about my own life experiences and different subjects around being somebody from the LGBT community with a disability, and all of the additional stuff that brings, giving my own personal experiences, talking about my own views and feelings about things. But I'm also hoping to sort of branch out with that, and I've lined up a few people, other people with other disabilities that are from the community that I'm going to interview, and so I get their perspective as well. So it's not just about me; it's, you know, other people can talk about their own experiences, just to sort of give us ourselves another platform to have our voices heard in the wider world. Because I feel to a large degree that the LGBTQ community is quite, how can I put this without sounding nasty? It's quite clicky. And, you know, one of the things that I mentioned in my podcast this week is, you know, it's a very trendy kind of, you know, that's anything that's out there in social media, it's, you know, in your magazines and things like that, it's always your picture perfect, gorgeous women. You know, and you, there's not enough people out there with disabilities that are being put forward in the publicity to do with anything to do with the LGBT community. So this is my opportunity to get us more airtime, get us into people's consciousness more, and hopefully in turn that will mean that more people will get the opportunity to have all the other opportunities that other LGBT people are having out there, and we will start seeing more disabled LGBT people on the front cover of magazines, hosting shows, you know, on TV and all that kind of thing. So it's kind of like, I want to start a movement. You know, I think there's a saying, isn't there, that those, he that shouts loudest gets heard, sort of thing.
You've got a enough voice, Sal. I think if anyone's going to do it, you're going to get that one going, definitely.
I think, you know, if I start something and people, you know, and I publicise it in the right way, and the people, it gets put into the hands of the right people, it'll spread and more people will get heard, you know, and they'll hear it and join it and comment and contribute, and it will spread, and it will, you know, it will serve as a voice for all of us out there, really, that are not being heard at the moment and not having our needs met to be able to contribute to the LGBT community, you know.
And one of the things that I was well impressed with was your Diva Award.
Yeah, I know. that's sitting behind me, shining nicely, reminding me. Yeah, no.
Tell everyone how you won that and what happened.
2018, I was put forward to be nominated for a Diva Award for what they call the Community Champion. And that's sort of like an individual out in the community that's doing good to raise the profile for people from the LGBT community. So my name was put forward and I never thought anything of it. And I heard about a month later to say that I'd been shortlisted amongst four or five other women. Now you're talking about a Paralympic athlete, an England women's footballer, a mental health person that deals with mental health and is championing in that, a lesbian festival organizer, and me. And I'm like, there's no way amongst all of those I'm going to win. But I was shortlisted and did my bit to get people interested. And I was invited down to the award ceremony that night, down in London, posh hotel in London, dinner, all suited and booted, you know, celebrities everywhere. I thought, I'm just going to enjoy my night. I'm going to do what I do. I'm going to go around all the celebs.
Get all the
selfies with them and just have a really good night. And that's what I did. And we went in for the dinner. And the dinner sort of was running alongside the award ceremony type thing. And we started off the night on a table sort of near the entrance sort of thing. And halfway through, there was an interval, and one of the organisers came over and asked me and Nat to come and move tables. They were saying that the back end of the room where we were was getting a bit crowded and they needed to move people forward, which was a complete lie. They moved us to a table nearer the stage. And when
I bet you were thinking, bloody hell, they're just picking on us again.
Yeah, why are they picking on us? You know, pick on the disabled couple, you know.
Yeah.
All these other women you could move and you're moving us. Great, you know. Anyway, so they moved us to a table near the stage, and there was a ramp at the stage. And I didn't think anything of it because one of the other women in my category was also a wheelchair user. She was a Paralympian. So I didn't think anything of it. So I was eating my dinner, talking to all the celebs on my table, you know, feeling really starstruck. And then they announced my category. And I just froze, and Nat was like, come on. And I was like, nah, it's not going to happen. And I just carried on eating my dinner. I was eating my pudding. And then they mentioned my name. And I just froze. And Nat went up in the air. And she was like, you won. And one of the organisers came up behind me because I was in my manual chair and just pulled my chair away from the table and pushed me up the ramp because they were calling me up on stage and I wasn't hearing it because I was just in complete shock.
You were like, I'm loving this pudding right now. Leave me alone.
I'm enjoying my pudding, you know. And I'm talking to, I don't know who it was now, it was a celebrity lesbian couple, and I can't think who it was now. Anyway, I was talking to them and...
If it's Ellen DeGeneres and Portia de Rossi, I'm going to come down there and hit you.
And Lotz Holloway, the singer, was on the table as well with her friend. And we were just, you know, I was catching up with people because I don't get to see people very often. It's only like maybe once a year at one of these venues I get to catch up with people. So I was having a really good old chinwag with people and you know, just taking it all in and celebrity spotting and all the rest of it. But the funny thing was, during the early part of the evening, as people were arriving, we were doing our celeb spotting, and who walks in but Duncan James from Blue, right? So me and Nat was like, there's Duncan, let's go and talk to him, let's go talk to him. So we were chatting away with him, and I told him that I was nominated. And the first thing I heard when I was being wheeled up the stairs, Duncan jumped up from his table and he went, yes, Sally, like that. And I'm like, oh my God, that's Duncan James saying my name.
I've met Duncan James too.
That was brilliant. Another funny story, we were leaving the hall to go and have the drinks afterwards, and I was in a bit of a hurry, and I was actually chasing. Ross Kemp was there, and he was about to leave, and I hadn't had my selfie with him, and I was like, I'm not leaving here until I've had a selfie with Ross Kemp. So I was going down the hall to try and catch him, and there was this man who stood in the doorway who wouldn't get out of my way, and we were having like a little bit of a side-to-side step. Are you going that way? Are you going that way? And that was absolutely in hysterics behind me. And she said, Do you know who that was? She said, do you know who you nearly ran over? And I went, no. She said, that was Jeremy Corbyn. I nearly ran over Jeremy Corbyn. All because I wanted to get to Ross Kemp.
You were there fangirling. I love it. Oh, it was so funny. But that it's a well-deserved award, and, you know, myself and a lot of people kind of shared stuff on Facebook to try and up your nominations and everything. So
I really appreciated all the support you did for me on that, because I honestly didn't think I was going to get that. With the caliber of the people that were in my category, though, I thought there's no way. It was to be considered.
It was stiff competition, but Sally Edwards came through.
I did. And it's sitting there now in my living room looking all shiny and sparkly. So if ever I have a bad day, I look over to that and think, I did that. I achieved that.
You and did, massively.
Yeah. Makes it all worthwhile. And, you know, and it just gives me hope that if, you know, if people are taking notice of what I'm doing and what I'm saying, then it means that, A, that the work that I'm doing is worthwhile, and it means that, you know, for future generations, you know, I could be in some way, hopefully, making a difference for people.
Well, you definitely are, because, you know, seeing some of your lives that you do, and, you know, seeing some of the comments that people are making while you're doing lives, and the kind of sense of community that you're building with your social media platforms, people are engaged and people do give a shit what you're saying, and they're, you know, I think you're inspiring them to be more confident within themselves, because they're not alone, and the feelings that they have are, you know, completely valid. And, you know, you yourself and Nat and everything that you guys do just gives them a sense of belonging and a sense of, oh, okay, I can feel like this, or I can say something, or I can challenge. And that's what it's about, isn't it? Definitely.
Yeah,
well, I've read the comments, mate. You will have done as well. So don't be all coy on that one.
You know, I try and take it in my stride, because, you know, I'm not doing it for my own glory at all. You know, I'm doing it because it matters, and it matters to me about the inequality that I have. And if I'm experiencing it, then other people are going to be experiencing it. And if I can use my platform to make a difference and try and make people to think differently and create change, then I'm going to do that. You know, I'm not going to just sit here and take all the glory and gloat about it, you know, because that would be pointless.
That's not me at all.
You know, I want to make a difference for other people.
Yeah. So, yeah, you definitely are, a 1,000,000%.
I try.
All over it. One of the things I think we should probably make clear is that it's yourself and your partner, Nat, that are both, you know, disabled and have to navigate the world. So it's not as simple as just you.
Just me, yeah.
I know, obviously, we've been friends we just worked out about 5 years. So I know how difficult some of the things are that you have to work around. But things like taxis, you've had an absolute blimmin' nightmare with, isn't it?
Oh, that's a whole chapter on its own. Yeah, that's horrendous. Where do I even start? I used to, as you know, used to use a manual wheelchair before I upgraded, and I'm now in a powered chair. And we used to be able to, what we used to do when we used to go around is we'd have to get one of the big black Hackney cabs, obviously with a ramp, because Nat's in a powered chair, has always been in a powered chair as long as I've known her. So she uses the ramp to get in. And then what I do is I get in first, I use the ramp, get in, and I used to transfer out of my manual chair and sit on the back seat. And then they get Nat in and then fold up my chair and stow it away, sort of thing. Like where they would do with the luggage.
Yeah.
And so many times we've had issues, we've had arguments with taxi drivers on the street about whether they can take us or not. We've had taxi drivers not turn up. We've had taxi drivers turn up, see that it's two wheelchairs and turn around and leave us abandoned on the street. I remember one incident in particular. It was at the end of Manchester Pride. It was on the Sunday night after the main event on the Sunday, and we were on the one corner of the street, and we booked this taxi, and we waited like 20 minutes, 25 minutes after it was due, and it hadn't come. So we rang on them, and they said, "Oh well, yeah, you weren't there, you weren't where you said you were." I said, "Well, we are. Yeah. I can tell you exactly where we are, and we gave her the landmarks, the name of the streets, and everything." I said, "Well, we'll send you another one, but you weren't where you said you were in the first place, but we were." Anyway, like 15 minutes later, we were the top of the street where we said we were, and there was a turn-in, and we saw a taxi at the top of the street, and it sort of like stopped, looked at us, turned itself around, and drove off again. So we replied and said, "We think your taxi's just come halfway down the road, and he's gone again." "No, you weren't there," blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they argued with us. Anyway, it took about 2.5 hours from that point to get from where we were to get all the way over to Salford, where we were staying in our hotel. By the time we got home, it was about 4 a.m, because the drivers just saw it was two wheelchairs. It was late, it was dark, it was probably raining at that point, because it's usually always raining when we get stuck. And he just couldn't be bothered.
It's just horrendous. Like, where's people's compassion for a start? And secondly, that's their bloody job. I mean, when you complain to these kind of companies like taxis and stuff, what's their response? Do they try and shirk it off because they're self-employed through the taxi driver?
This is another thing. If you don't know this, if you've never had this experience and you've never had to go down the route of complaining, you wouldn't know this. There's so much information that you need to ring them up with, geared up with, before you even make that phone call, because they need evidence. They need to know the exact vehicle, time, date, place, vehicle registration plate, their badge number, and all the rest of it. And you have to give, it's almost like giving a police statement. And let's face it, if, you know, you've been out on a night out, it's like 3 a.m, you want to get home, it's cold, it's dark. excuse me, it's not always easy to get that information. But if you haven't got any of that information before you even pick the phone up to make a complaint, there's no point, because they won't listen to it. And those are the rules. Those are the official rules and regulations set out by all of the taxi counselling licensing places, with, as a result of guidelines by the government that have been approved. And that's the information that you have to take to them before you can even complain. But if you're a person with a disability that's got poor verbal communication, how are you even going to do that in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you and Nat are both very eloquent. You know, you're very intelligent, intellectual women who, you know, go and kick ass wherever you can. But to expect you to give that information when actually you should just be able to give the time and place you were, that where you were trying to get the taxi, and they should have all that information, because they'll have the telephone number you phoned on, because that's the phone number they use to phone you back to tell your taxi's there.
Yeah.
So actually they should be held to account to be able to investigate based on you giving them, you know, pretty minimal information. But it's incredible that those rules are in place.
Yeah. And the people on the end of the phone in the taxi office, they don't care. At the end of the day, they need their taxis to get from one job to another as quick as possible, because they're all self-employed. And the more short, easy jobs they make, the more money they make. Whereas, you know, it might take them an extra 5 minutes to deal with us, potentially. For them, that's them losing money. They don't, it's like as if they don't see us as valued customers. It's like as if our money's tainted. It's like our money's not good enough for them just because they have to do a little bit of extra work, you know. And that's a human thing. That's not even about a rule and regulation. That's about common human decency, you know. And
yeah, compassion.
Really,
like,
really sad that that happens. But, you know, that happens so many times. It's really, really difficult. And it does. It knocks your confidence. It makes you angry. It makes you upset. And it knocks your confidence. I know we had an incident about 4 years ago coming back from an event, coming back into my town. At my train station here, and there were four taxis in the rank, ready and able to take us, and they all refused, and we had a massive argument on the taxi rank, and in the end I got the police involved, but I made a complaint to the council, and because of various things going missing, files going missing, members of staff leaving, and new members of staff needing to pick up the case. From the day we phoned up and made that initial complaint with all the information that they needed, to the day where we got a phone call with what they deemed as being a reasonable resolution, which it wasn't, was 2 years.
Wow.
And that's one complaint. In the meantime, we phoned them up and complained about another 20 or 30 situations that had happened just to that one council in my town.
Wow.
So,
and this must be happening, you know, very often across not just the UK, but across the world. Like, this is a innate issue that is a worldwide problem.
Yeah.
And I just don't understand why more help and assistance and, you know, regulation changes aren't being done to assist with, you know, the basic thing of being able to complain about not just the level of service, but actually getting you into a safe place like your home.
Yes. And how do you know, it's okay saying that rules and regulations and policies and that need to be reviewed and checked and changed and all the rest of it, but that's the easy part. How do you change people's common decency? How do you change the attitudes? That's a lot harder, because you can get one taxi driver, you know, one day you have an absolute nightmare with, and it's awful, and you have to go down that route of complaining. The next day you might get a taxi driver who bends over backwards and couldn't do enough for you. So it all, a lot of it depends on the individuals themselves.
Nice. And
how, you know, we're up against, that's an impossible fight. You know, how do we even contemplate tackling that issue? The only way I see that, like I said in my own podcast this week, is by more disabled people coming out demanding the service that they're entitled to. And if they are coming up against problems, the more people that complain and make a fuss about these things, the more people in the wider world will start to take notice, and there will hopefully be some kind of major discussions and some changes that will start to take place. But it means that more disabled people have got, on top of all the other things that they've got to deal with in their life, they've got to be proactive. They've got to be more proactive, like we have been for the last 5 years. And like I say, not everyone is capable of doing that. Not everyone's got the energy or the time or the capability of going that far and actually sticking with it. I mean, we stuck with it. I mean, we were so outraged by that one case that we, you know, we complained, and you know, we were ringing them up every few weeks. What's happening? We were stuck with it because we were just so outraged, because for four people to be stood there in their cabs looking at us, basically laughing at us and refusing to take us because we were two wheelchair users.
Just disgusting. You
know, and we had no other option of getting home. There was just no way. I live too far away from the centre of town, from where the train station is. You know, I live, it would probably take a person, an able-bodied person, from where the train station is to where I live, it would probably take you about an hour. So, you know, as a wheelchair user, you know, you can imagine how long it would take.
Well, and you haven't got the capability, like your power chairs obviously only have a battery for so long. You'd already been out and about and used it, like, and shouldn't be expected to. An able-bodied person can call a cab, jump in, get home within minutes. Like,
exactly.
You can't Yeah, horrendous.
It's really hard. And then, you know, so that's just the taxi side of it as well. But, you know, and you know, you've got the venues and places that you want to go to. And it's like, right, because I did a podcast this week all about sexuality as a disabled person and being out on the scene sort of thing. If you can't even get into these venues in the first place, if you're new to the scene, if you've newly come out and you want to get onto your local scene and make friends and potentially meet partners, etc., how can you even do that if A, you can't get a taxi to the venue, and B, you can't get into the venues anyway? Because a lot of these venues, they're either on the main street, busy street in the middle of a town or a centre somewhere, and you have to go either up a load of stairs or go down into a cellar space, and there's no access. So, you know, you're pushed away from society without even, you know, without even getting through the door sort of thing, and that's so.
And how do you find those venues generally? Do you find people are accepting and chat to you, or do you find people dismissive or indifferent? You don't notice a difference between other people, and
on a general night out, you mean?
Yeah, as a disabled person, do you feel like you're marginalised by the scene?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, you're always going to get the situation where you're going to get a group or individuals that have had way too much to drink, and they wear like red rag to a ball with them. They come over and they think that they're doing a really great thing by making a fuss of you, but A, they might hurt you, because quite often they'll just come and grab you and start waving your arms in the air like as if you're some kind of infant. Without even asking. You know, the polite thing would be, would you like to dance, and is there anything I need to do that can help you to dance sort of thing? But no, they just make assumptions. They come up to you. Quite often they'll come up behind you and pull your chair from behind you, which is dangerous. And
you could dislocate people's arms if you've brittle bone or if you've got, you know, and issues with your joints.
And obviously there's, you know, the spatial awareness as well. People, you know, if you're not in the disability world, if you're not conscious of it, you know, as a non-disabled person, you're out and about, you know, your focus, your physical focus is on your eye line, you know, so you're looking up and about, you know, and you don't think that, oh, just underneath you, a bit lower than your natural eye line, there's somebody there in a wheelchair. So you get knocked over, you get drinks spilt on you. You know, in the days before the smoking ban, you used to get fag ash blown in your face and smoke in your face, and people will fall over you. And, you know, it's really, really dangerous. It's like, it's almost like going into battle, especially going into a really busy venue, which is why we tend to sort of not go to anything like really, really major, because we would just get crushed. You know, it's bad enough going to some of the smaller venues and smaller things that we have gone to. You know, people get carried away and they get excited, and, you know, they're not aware of the other people around them. You know, they've had a drink maybe, and, you know, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't be enjoying themselves, because that's them enjoying themselves. It's great. But
there's
not
an awareness,
about,
isn't there?
Yeah, there's an awareness. And it means that we're not enjoying ourselves, because we're either, A, constantly waiting for someone to fall over us, or we're constantly having to get, like, bouncers and security staff to get people to move away. Because quite often, if we're put at the front by the stage sort of thing for an event, quite often people won't be aware that you're there, and they'll come and stand in front of you and you can't see. You try and get them to move, and some people can be really rude, really rude. And you know, they will refuse to move, or they'll argue with you, or they'll laugh at you and think you've been funny and all of that, you know, and it spoils it. There's been so many things that we've been to that has really, other people's ignorance has spoiled that event for us because of the way that they've behaved.
Especially with the amount of effort that it takes for you guys to be able to get to an event.
Yes,
so you've got,
yes,
you know, the actual physical travel for getting there, whether it's train or taxi, and then you've got the actual venue even being able to get you in there, as you know, you already, for the venue you were talking about, only had 4 wheelchair access points.
Yeah,
that's two, you to have two, that's quite a lot you're then taking up 50% of their venue. So the likelihood of you being able to get two in those kind of venues is pretty slim, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because there just aren't enough of
no.
those.
And then you pay,
for you
and
to
you
end
pay
up with dickheads as well yeah. on top of that.
Exactly.
I mean, it just ruins your whole...
It ruins it.
Day,
so
yeah.
It is. It's like literally you hold your breath. You get ready overnight and you go out and you're holding your breath because you're waiting. You're almost anticipating something to go wrong. Either something wrong with the taxi, or you're getting abuse, or you're going to get hurt, or something's going to go wrong. So if we go out and we have an event, you know, we do something, and we come back and nothing's happened, and we've had a perfectly good evening, that is a bonus for us because yeah. there's usually something that always goes wrong. Now, you can imagine, you know, we like to go out and be sociable just as much as anybody else. You can imagine having that amount of stress on your shoulders every time you go out. It would make you not want to go out, and it does make you not want to go out because you think it's too tiring. It takes away the enjoyment.
Yeah, definitely. And especially when, you know, you end up in a lot of pain. And I know, you know, just from knowing you as a friend, like the kind of issues that you have day to day. So when you do get out to enjoy yourselves, having that additional stress on top of, you know, having pretty shitty weeks or months, you just can't imagine it. And so many people who are able-bodied just take for granted jumping in a taxi, yes. going to a venue, getting into a venue, you know, yes. dancing like an absolute prat and going home with no drama. And, you know, the worst yeah. they might have is a dodgy kebab. Like,
yeah.
I think people need
you to cope with that. If that yeah. was all the worries that we went on with, you know, I'd be happy. That would be fine. But, you know, it's more often than not, it's a lot serious than that.
Yeah, yeah.
So hard, you know.
Yeah, and people who are listening just need to have that awareness and realise that, you know, yes, you go out and have a great night, but also if there's people around you that are disabled or are having kind of mobility issues, then, you know, respect them and also help them and, you know, talk yeah. to them, you know, your people. We've had some bloody hilarious times, you know, at Elfest and bits and pieces.
Exactly.
I think some people are just scared to actually have an interaction and, you know, make friends. I think they feel worried yeah. around what they should say or shouldn't say. And
it's fear, and that fear is because of a lack of knowledge. That's what it comes from, and that's where all the ignorance and all the rest of it, that's where that comes from. But if more people actually took the time out to actually interact with people and actually find out what they needed and what they were all about, and that, rather than making assumptions and jumping in with their own kind of solutions, which 9 times out of 10, like we've said, is the wrong thing to do. If they did that and spent more time with the individual, then they'd have a better understanding and they would react totally different. It's lack of knowledge.
Yeah, and hopefully those people will go away and educate other people as well. And,
yeah.
You know, and then hopefully there would then be less people, less taxi drivers who are, you know, ignorant twats, so you just leave you in the lurch, which is horrific. Thanks for joining me, Sally. And guys, if you want to find her on Rainbow Warrior, get involved. She's on Instagram, Facebook, and has many, many followers and people and things going on all the time. So thank you for your time, Sally. Really appreciate it. And we'll catch up soon, no doubt.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for the opportunity for coming onto your podcast, and good luck with it.
Not a problem. Lots of love, buddy. I will speak to you soon.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Spill the LGBT. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you haven't done so already, please rate, review, share and subscribe, as that helps other listeners find this podcast. For you fabulous, positive, constructive people, feel free to reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. There you can help give us topics, link us to exciting people to speak with or interview, or give us things to discuss in future episodes. This is a podcast for our community, so want it to be engaging. Thanks very much. Later, my lovers.